Okay, so that's actually kind of interesting, Kristen. I think I might email the two people that I did have an email exchange with a few months ago and see what the issues are in Massachusetts around getting the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been to a number of, you know, informational workshops, and he's been done a few webinars, and I work closely with our state science specialists, but it's just through the Minnesota Science Teacher Network, and I've just been really impressed with how open and transparent. It's John Olson who's the lead here, who's working with it, but they've done a really great job.
And are these webinars and workshops intended for teachers, or
They're for teachers, and then those of us that are involved, you know, with professional development and with curriculum development. And then, I mean, the ones I've been at, there's been a real variety of people, I would say, probably more at the curriculum specialist level than teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's intended, I mean, it's out to the Minnesota Science Teacher Association network. So,
Kristen, do you think that, given the prominence that Earth Sciences plays inside the new framework, that, if there are people who, let's say, the Clean Initiative, imagine some of those people are not aware of the reservoirs of materials that they could draw from to as they start designing their implementation or, you know, all that. As say 10 states lead this, would they be open to kind of having rounds of conversations about how to kind of connect initiatives where there's value?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know John very well, and we actually have funded an environmental ed specialist at the state level the last 3 years, too, although his job's kind of going away. So John actually, I think a few weeks ago or months ago, sent me info on Clean. And I said, oh, remember I told you about that a while ago? So they're absolutely very open to talking about that, and they are already, although in Minnesota, the way our legislature works, we actually won't go through adoption of national standard or science standards again until like 2018, I think.
Right.
He already is beginning to do professional development around the next generation science standards, just because our standards are similar enough already that it's a natural direction to go. But yes, absolutely. I see him being very receptive to that. And supportive.
So are people seeing this as an ongoing an issue in terms of states have their cycles of when they accept standards and starting to get teachers up to speed, even if they're not officially adopted yet?
That's what I'm hearing is going to happen is that, like California, for example, probably won't adopt until 17.
Mm.
But there's a lot of steps that are going to start happening on the way to official adoption. But I think, you know, for the initiatives we talk about, figuring out who and how and when is going to be really important as we go beyond the phase we've been focusing on recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Scott, your emails are spot on with that. And, you know, how do we triage, you know, the who do we need to build networks with first and then, you know, and so on across the system?
Yeah, I just mentioned to other folks who maybe haven't heard what I've talked about with that is Washington State is a lead state and has a certain cycle. In Minnesota, there's a kind of cycle in which these things will come up for adoption, though. And it's based on when our testing changes. There's a contract, I think, that takes it to 2016. And so there's not likely to be any change in the testing until then. But my understanding is that we may actually go ahead and do an adoption and then start that process of working with teachers to bring them up to speed with what the change will be. Because this will be a substantial change, even in Washington State, that actually has quite a bit of material that's similar to Next Generation Science Standards, because we have environmental and sustainability learning standards also here that have been adopted for several years. So they are already part of our curriculum. But it's going to be an interesting process, but everyone is pretty committed to it. So.
Scott, what's the timeline? This is Anna Gold. What's the timeline that Washington is thinking about?
What I heard, and it was just basically a colleague that was that sat in on a meeting, he said it was 2016 because of how our testing stuff is done here in Washington State. But the implication was that that was when it would be a full-out adoption into the with teachers and students. But we would be doing a lot of work before that in terms of...
It seems to me that the standards are just so rich that even with the testing that might be in place currently, the students would even do better anyway on those tests, even if the standards weren't officially adopted, if teachers have professional development around these new standards earlier than their official adoption date.
Well, it doesn't seem to work like that. I can tell you that when we talked about doing earth science with teachers, they said, well, we only test biology. We're not interested in earth science. So that's the level we're dealing with.
That's true.
Yeah, to add new stuff. You know, my argument, and this is, you know, with the project that I'm involved in, is like, well, then we should be doing extracurricular stuff that makes sure that students actually see some earth science stuff, even though they're not being tested for it. So that's, for me, is the counter argument, is we want to make sure that students have a full range of scientific experiences.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, another piece of this is that there are other prongs to our strategy that are different than the NGSS strategy that kind of could expedite some of this. And, you know, what I'm specifically referring to is the idea of engaging colleges and universities to ask for more students to have proficiencies in this area, independent of assessment, that are in, you know, to kind of spike things forward a little bit. But we're going to be pushing it as hard as we can on all fronts.
Yeah, and especially for pre-service teachers. So there's a whole area for us to be working on right now, is making sure those teachers coming through the colleges are actually getting really comfortable with the Next Generation Standards. So by the time they graduate and are getting into the class, very well versed in all those materials. So yeah,
absolutely.
That's a major strategy.
Frank, is there a national organization that guides colleges in what they should require their students to have, or how would you do this? Would you contact colleges separately?
So go ahead.
I was just going to say colleges don't have set standards for particular kinds of classes. What groups do tend to have is professional organizations have some set standards that they have that are supposed to be guidelines for universities, is what my understanding is.
What I was going to say is it depends on if it's teacher education. So there is something called NCATE, which is the National Council for the Accreditation of Teacher Education, and those standards, NSTA would be probably the controlling group on their standards. Problem is, their standards have just been adopted, their revised standards. So they sort of reflect the Next Generation Science Standards, but what they do is they say that teacher needs to understand their specific state standards. So it's kind of a roundabout. But that's for like 60 to 70% of the teacher education institutions around the country.
Yeah, but that's for teacher accreditation. I thought the question was much more general than that, in terms of just undergraduate students.
If it's undergraduate students, there really isn't anything. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, what I'm specifically referring to is it was known back in the 60s that some of the science community, more on the physics side, chemistry side, worked really hard to get colleges to emphasize certain sciences and de-emphasize other sciences, and that was not through any the mechanisms back then probably aren't useful here. But still, the larger point is that the idea that's currently working is the American president's climate commitment through the universities and colleges. I always botch that acronym, so I'm not even going to try. But there's a lot of, 677 signatories to that who are committed to it. And the second part of that pledge is the curricular piece, so that it's where they're struggling more than the institutional piece or infrastructure piece. But the larger point is that, there's got to be a way to send signals from the undergraduate, post-secondary level to the secondary level of really what students are they looking for, and what coursework are they looking to have some proficiency in. And this is an out-of-the-box thing. It's not going to go through normal routes, but I think it's another way of expediting this pressure.
It seems to me that there will be multiple approaches depending on what kind of colleges they are and the particular programs that the students are in. I do suspect that NCATE and influencing the actual courses that pre-service teachers have to take, that route is going to take a long time, but that should not keep us from paying attention to it.
Yeah.
That's going to be a really key piece.
Can you say the letters for NCATE? What is that? What are the, is the acronym?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was NCATE.
Okay.
National Council for the Accreditation of Teacher Education, and it's NCATE.org.
Great. But I would expect liberal arts colleges and places like that to develop a freshman course in climate change that maybe all freshmen would take. Or sometimes there's a particular book that everyone in a small college reads, and then they chat about it on the freshman hall group. So, I'm saying it's going to be different strokes for different folks, I think.
Right. It's just, what there isn't is there's not, like we've just gone through this process of reviewing these standards that are supposed to be implemented everywhere. At K-12, this doesn't hold for universities. People could put together a climate course, and in one there may be no resemblance to the content from one university to the next. That being said, what I was expecting, now I've just watched this at one university where it's basically a business school, and so they're really talking about the terminal science classes a student might take. And would they, the way they're trying to devise the content of such a class is that students should at least know what a high school senior has to know. Because that's kind of, they're a similar level of student when you're talking about generally a basic course in a particular science. So that's one way that the next generation science standards could influence content of courses at the undergraduate level, but not necessarily major courses for majors.
Nice.
But still the idea of using the pressure from that organization down to help more states adopt and more states expedite their adoption of this content area, especially with the high school level part of the equation, which is a unique piece of the puzzle. And then we've talked about that in the listserv recently. So, I think this is just another piece of the puzzle. I definitely like the NCATE piece as well.
Yeah, and of course there are associations of every kind of educational institution. So for the liberal arts places, I think most of those institutions are members of the Association of American Colleges and Universities, which promotes the teaching of the liberal arts and has meetings and workshops on how to do X, Y, and Z, and advocates for certain kinds of curriculum structure and content to include and that sort of thing. So that's an interesting kind of body to think about collaborating with, I guess.
Exactly right, Don. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we kind of slipped into this very good, interesting conversation, but I did want to get back to asking if there were any announcements.
This is Frank. One thing I will share with you guys is when Ted Willard briefed the NOAA Education Council on the Next Generation Science Standards and NSDA's initiatives for implementation support, one of the things he alluded to very quickly, and I'm not sure if others would know this, but I think the San Antonio annual national conference of the NSDA this early April is going to be a very focused on the NGSS space. So I don't know who's going to be there, but we've never really had a NSTA climate literacy kind of contingent or strategy, but we may want to think about that as a key place for the national science supervisors, but N-cubed.
It's the Council for the Council for State Science Supervisors.
There it is. Thank you. Sorry.
It's CS cubed.
Too many acronyms, guys.
Yep.
There's a lot of. We may want to think about next steps on NGSS in the context of NSDA and CS cubed.
That would be a great. Do they do a conference? All of them.
Yeah, and NSDA is going to be in Boston next year, 2014. I know San Antonio is coming up.
Besides NSTA, is there one that's just for the state science specialists?
Yes.
Council of State Science Supervisors has a meeting that precedes the NSTA meeting.
Okay.
Turk has been at that a number of years in a row. I could look into the status of that because Turk very often sponsors a lunch, which kind of gives us lunchtime to talk to them.
Mm.
So I can look into what the status of that is this year.
I think that would be a great idea, Tamara.
Because one of the problems with NSTA is that the proposals for doing sessions there is basically due a year ahead of time. So, like, 2 weeks after this one's over, it'll be the deadline for next year. And
right.
So it's hard to really think in terms of quite that long a term. So I know that I have, Ann and I are on a presentation together. One of the things that I would try to do, and maybe we can think about this, is the half-day and full-day workshops are much more useful to, I think, to a lot of the people. You can get a lot more done in one of them. And we did propose one of those this past year for CLEAN for Earth Labs. It didn't get accepted. But we might think about doing that kind of proposal for this coming year.
We did do one last year. But I was part of a.
You were part of one last year?
I was part of one last year that Louise Huffman coordinated.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of CLN folks were in that.
Yeah, no, I think I was. I think that's.
You were there.
That one too. Yeah, I was part of that. In fact, we then later on shared a presentation session.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think we've had a presence at them, but we've not really had a coordinated effort. And maybe a focus that we could do is we could put together one of these workshops that focus on the how you might address climate change in the context of the next generation science standards.
Yeah,
I think that would be really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might also spin it for biology and chemistry and physics teachers who are likely to feel the heat of needing to infuse more
mm-hmm.
climate change into their curriculum.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think that's an audience that needs our help.
Yeah.
Okay, so another thing in terms of announcements is that I'd like to just let everybody know, because I think it sort of goes along the lines of this also, is that I did send, after I submitted our input into the online survey for the input to the Next Generation Science Standards, I did send it to Mike Weissessions and said to Don that you had suggested I send it to him, and he was very, very grateful that I did that. He said that they have a workshop or a meeting, a two-day meeting in like a week, in which Achieve is going to give the writers an overview of what the input was, and then they have, I think, from February 13th to March 1st to make all the changes. And so by having our input now, first of all, we're at the top of his list for looking at what changes might be, and secondly, he has more time to think about implementing it in a reasonable way. So so we might have a really significant impact on the acceptance of our suggestions.
Good. That's great to hear, because everyone knows this about suggesting.
Yeah, well, I know that you kind of heard it that NAG was, it was suggested that they submit it, and you weren't in that direct conversation, and I realized that this was a little bit of an odd thing for me to just send it to him, but I had chaired a panel for GSA on earth science literacy, and Mike Weissessions was a member of the panel, so I've had a significant email exchange with him for over the past year for that position statement, and so I knew my name wasn't coming out of the blue for him.
That's good.
Okay, so let's think about these potential sessions for NSTA, because I think it is really ripe for us to try to address this group. And what we could potentially do also is not just go to the national one. We could potentially use the same presentation for the four regional ones.
Yes.
As well as state
right.
science teachers conferences.
This is starting to become a strategy for us, and I absolutely applaud that. I think that's what we need to be doing. We should be very
okay
on what we're doing and you know, going to the right places.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so is there anything else? So another piece that we sort of said on our website that we would talk about today is when we started having the conversations about providing input to the next generation science standards, we also realized that, you know, that this is just a beginning piece, which is all the content, but the need for professional development and getting it out there is huge, and it is what we've been talking about for the last half hour. But we talked about putting together a one-page document that could be easily shared with a lot of these groups. And while I think that such a document is premature until it actually gets published, the final version gets published in March, we could start thinking about what it might contain, what would be useful to be in such a document. Because if it's only one page, it's not going to be a whole, you know, it's not going to be a whole lot. So what might such a document, what might be useful to have in such a document?
So, Tamara, this is Frank. Sorry, my connection is a little weak where I am. But there was a document that was written by Gene Moon and Brian Reiser, about the new vision for how professional development should be designed in the context of the next generation science standards. And I've sent it around a couple times. If people don't know what I'm referring to, but I really think that there's a new model that they're calling for in the context of the standards. So we may want to make sure that we
okay.
include that in that space.
Where is it? So what was the first person's name? Brian Reiser, and who else?
Gene Moon. She used to be at the National Research Council. But I'll send everyone the link for this paper. It came out a couple months ago.
Okay.
So, but it's got some sizable implications.
Okay. Yeah, that would be good.
Hammer, it does strike me that this one pager is almost like a proposal to these various meetings, what the nature of the workshop would be. And so I think it's worthwhile us thinking about what it is that we would present in such a workshop, and maybe that's what's on that one page.
Yeah, well, I think it might be the connection. How do you think about teaching climate science in the context of the next generation science standards? I mean, obviously, most of our input was around basically two standards, mostly at the high school level, mostly ESS2 and ESS3, for those that remember the nomenclature. I think we sort of have to, And while that's the obvious places, if you, you know, sit down and just look at them, even, you know, first coming to them, this might point to some avenues that are straightforward, but is a shortcut for allowing people in other disciplines to see where those connections might be made.
Yeah.
It obviously can't be comprehensive, but it certainly could sort of provide the shortcuts.
Yeah, I think that's worth
it. You know, I think they're going to be looking for, and this is probably going to come out in that how professional development should be presented with the next generation science standards. I think there was some general information about that a while ago that I looked at, and I think what you just mentioned would highlight the core discipline concepts that are being gone for, that
mm-hmm.
climate change is important too. And then what the workshop would do would be to link to the cross-linking, the things like patterns and systems and models. They're going to be looking for those kinds of connections. So the science engineering practices that are connected to whatever core discipline you're looking at, and then also looking for what are the connections to the common core. How does it connect with literacy? How does it connect with math?
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring true for other people?
I see that the one of the strands for the 2014 conference is science and literacy, a symbiotic relationship. So they're looking for people that are linking the common core English language arts and science as well. So I'm just adding to, I think that they're looking for that.
I think they're looking, there would be more than just pointing to those connections. A one-pager could really just point to them. But the workshop could actually address implementing them. Because, I mean, the standards themselves are going to show some of these connections to the Common Core.
Oh, absolutely. I was going more in the direction of the practice piece. I think that is really what's so great about these standards and where I think climate change can really be taught dynamically and well.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Cervenek, one of the things I would consider with workshops is trying to give maybe, in addition to content and resources, two or three deep experiences where people are going to go through almost as students the activities that they're going to do with their classes, in the sense that they have something tangible they can walk away with, because I think for the shock with the new standards is going to be typical lecture and content delivery is not going to suffice.
Yep.
So what do those look like so it makes it a bit more accessible so that when they get guided to additional good resources, they know what they look like? Because for some people, especially in rural areas, I know at least in Ohio, these conferences, if they're able to attend, is really the only way that they get to interact with any of their teachers and emulate other models of things that they find that are successful. So,
yeah.
I totally support that.
The other thing that seems that was really striking as I was, you know, finishing up making all of these suggestions is, and we kind of got at it when we were discussing that Appendix J, which gave the models for the courses, is that the traditional biology, chemistry, and physics don't really fit with this real well. I mean, in terms of just, you know, on the surface. But what are the chances that, what is the likelihood that school systems are going to totally change the kind of courses that they are teaching, given that they have a whole flock of teachers who are chemistry teachers and biology teachers and physics teachers? And is there a way to address that?
Well, I think we have to figure out a way.
Because it was really discouraging to me that one of the options was to have your three courses and try to fit this in. And yes, there is the potential to take these different pieces and put it into, but if you still feel like you still have to teach all the content of the physics course that was there before in the same way, there's not a whole lot of room for this. So you really have to rethink the content of those courses completely, even if you still want to call them biology, physics, and chemistry, which I think would be very possible. It's just the content of the course would have to change completely.
Well, and I think that's really what we're getting at with the next generation science standards. This stuff is going to have to be taught differently.
But let's remember, guys, and that's I mean, that is what is called for. But the level of support for any practitioner who's going to be working in this is tremendous. I mean, it's somewhere in the 50 to 80 contact hours sustained over time with support is the only thing that's going to change practice. And that's only so much practice would change. We're talking about a very sizable amount of practice being changed. So the contact support is the model for that is going to have to be robust. And so we're going to have to link together a lot of initiatives that are working towards themselves in a common way. So, Kristen, your work, I mean, who else in your area is going to support those teachers? Because no way can you and your group support that much, but it's going to have to be a consortium of support in the right way.
Right.
I mean, there are some successful programs out there that I would even say you need 120 hours, probably, you know, pushing 50 to 80. I think 120 hours, and there are some communities doing that. The modeling instruction community out of Arizona State has probably 6,000 people trained in physics and chemistry and some biology now that are doing that. And there's a lot of cross-curricular connection because many of those teachers were bio people that had to start teaching physics and chemistry just by virtue of their school district changing the curriculum. So there's a lot of energy threads, especially, that they have that are interdisciplinary. But that's really been forced by, you know, the workshops are all 3 weeks in the summer full-time for those 3 weeks. But there's a huge following that they have. And their model, I think, if other groups are interested in connecting with them, creating a network of groups where materials developed for other curricular areas could easily fold into that and the network could increase by virtue of partnerships.
So this 120 hours, is this professional development provided by a university or provided by other groups, or what is?
All of the above. What they did is it was NSF funded 20 years ago, and then the funding ran out 10, and so it's been state block grants, but they ran 50 workshops last summer, all by local. Some are funded by industry, some are sponsored by state, some are block grants, some are local initiatives, but they have a pretty dynamic group of people that are just starting to get to the point where the biology and the chemistry, or the biology and the earth sciences is coming on board, where people are looking at that, and it's by a lot of the physics and chemistry people knowing they're teaching other areas, wanting to increase their content knowledge, so they start to look to other areas to try to innovate themselves, and then typically put together materials. But they're looking for a lot of earth science stuff right now, because
and
teachers
who is
demand
the
it. It's right now it was started at Arizona State, and it's been spun off, and it's American Modeling Teachers Association is received the rights to handle all the materials. The only reason I know about this is I was trained in this 10 years ago as a biology teacher that had to start teaching physics, and I taught the workshops for 7 or 8 years, and like I said, there's a pretty avid following of they have 6,000 people right now and a very active community. And it's not.
Are these the workshops that were out of Biosphere?
No, they're separate from BSSC. It's it's completely separate from that. But
and who is talking?
It's Jason Cervenek.
Oh,
I'm at Bird Polar in Ohio.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yep. But I know that community really wants to. Those teachers are demanding more earth science materials, and they have a very deep knowledge of energy and how to represent energy. So, and also particles. And that connects very closely with the CO2 emissions issue and with the lack of understanding for energy at almost all levels in the U.S. and really the cross-cutting themes of things that aren't taught consistently in the U.S. system.
Are these 6,000 teachers distributed nationally or in a particular region?
Yes, all nationally. There's certain pockets. There's a large amount in Illinois and Arizona and then also North Carolina, but they're national.
And do teachers who have been through the program teach this because you said you taught it and you were trained in it, or so that's the way. Is that the model?
Well, the beautiful part about it, it's a way to teach and it's a curriculum framework. But once you learn the methodology, it applies to everything. It's quantitatively based, but involves everything that Next Generation Science Standards wants to be. This has been, but they're very willing to accept new content. Very easy to build in because it's a structure that sits over that, so it's not content specific, which is the beautiful part. It was based out of physics ed research in the 1980s and 90s. So Eric Mazur, if you follow the stuff that he's done at Harvard with the Force Concept Inventory, they developed that instrument, which drove the innovation and instruction. But there's so much of the stuff that NextGen is going to need and that we talk about with climate science that would fit nicely with this community that's already established.
Can you send out a link?
It was part of the
analysis.
Yeah. Now, this sounds really interesting because a lot of the work that I've been doing is you're echoing a lot of the things that we've been trying to do in terms of teachers providing the professional development to other teachers and making the curriculum flexible.
Yeah. Now, the thing you'll find is you look at the group, it's all volunteer-based, so which is why it's worked so well and it's been grassroots. When you start to interact with folks, you realize that everybody's still teachers or people that are working in different jobs now, that I work at the university now, so that they're only getting to the point where they have money to invest in research and better dissemination. So when you look at the stuff, you'll see stuff maybe isn't as beautiful as a textbook or something that's got a huge amount of federal funding, but that's because the volunteers believe in it so much that you have these people that keep it going. But all those 50 workshops last summer were local initiatives where teachers on the ground saw the value and wrote the grants themselves to get the stuff funded. So there's a lot of buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
So I will send a link out here now.
Okay, no, that would be great.
Modelinginstruction.org.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything else? Any other comments about the standards or about NSTA or professional development?
No, I just wanted to, I guess, reiterate or support the idea of developing something for NSTA that is usable, that we kind of together determine is best practice or, you know, aligned with the standards. As people like me who are situated in an area where I have people I could work with but could use as well. I'm just thinking, you know, as with professional development and also with the pre-service teachers, we have some great STEM education training programs here at St. Kate's and also at the university. And, you know, developing partnerships with them has been fun, but we haven't done anything really formal yet, and that would be a really powerful partnership as well.
I think a lot of these things can be drawn together to provide something that all of us can use, but that has a common vetting in terms of going from our conversation about the one pager to presentations at various NSTA meetings. If we can put together a workshop that can be implemented in various contexts, that whoever is closest by and goes to that particular meeting can present, that will really extend our reach much further than if any one or two of us were to try to do that. So I think that it might be an idea worth pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Tamara, there's one other piece of this equation. Sorry, I'm a little bit noisy. Is the teaching climate literacy and energy literacy pages on clean offers a spot to kind of extend support beyond just the workshop space. I'm assuming that's kind of what that was for, but we may have to, you know, include that in our revisioning of what would that be under this new model that would really be the most valuable. So I think, you know, some kind of common sharing of that space, but also gives us an opportunity, like we do with Clean, where we upload presentations. You know, if we upload agendas or various versions of the agenda, support materials, or the people who are involved, or even the outputs. But, I mean, we could go crazy here if we had the ability. But I think there's maybe some extension of the web support that might be useful here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if there's nothing else now, I think that we have a lot to think about and moving forward. And so we'll start thinking about maybe have another conversation about this in a few weeks and see where people are. And hopefully those standards will come out and be finalized. But I'd like to look so... So, Frank, if you could send out the link to that paper that you mentioned about PD and the Next Generation Science Standards. Jason, you can send out your link. That would be great.
Yep.
And we will talk again next week. Okay?
Thanks very much, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.